Raymond was sitting in the sooty sunlight with his back to the Arriviste skyline of Central Park South, staring at a cup of coffee. Marco felt shock, like a heavy hammer, as he stared at him from a few feet off. He suddenly realized he had never seen Raymond unshaven before, or wearing a dirty shirt, or wearing clothes that could have been slept in for night after night. Raymond's face seemed to be falling into itself, and it presented the kind of shock a small boy's face would bring if he had had all of his teeth extracted. Marco sat down across from Raymond at the sturdy outdoor table. There were only 8 or 9 people on the long, broad terrace. Marco and Raymond had a lot of room to themselves. He put his hand on top of Raymond's dirty hand with the black-rimmed fingers. "Hi, kid," he said almost inaudibly. Raymond looked up. His eyes glistened with wet. "I don't know what is happening to me," he said. And Marco could almost see the ripping Raymond felt. Raymond's emotion was like that of a curate with his head filled with cocaine, or perhaps like that of a man after he has had acid thrown into his eyes. The grief that shone dully out of Raymond blocked out everything else within Marco's field of vision. It was blackness which threw back no reflection. The seals in the large pool honked and splashed. Around the seal pond grew a moving garden of zoo-blooming balloons, their roots attached to bicycles and prams and small fists. The big cats were being fed somewhere in the area behind Marco, and they were noisy eaters.
"They are inside my head, like you said, aren't they, Ben?"
Marco nodded.
Can they make me do anything?"
Marco nodded less perceptibly.
"I have a terrible dream.
Oh, my God.
I have a terrible dream that my mother and I..."
Raymond's eyes were so wild that Marco could not look at him. He shut his eyes and thought of the shapes of prayers. A rubber ball came bouncing, then rolling along the stone terrace. It lodged against Marco's feet. A small boy with a comical face and hair like a poodle's came running after it. He held Raymond's arm as he bent down to get his ball, then ran away from them, shouting at his friends.
"Who killed Josie, Ben?"
And Marco could not answer him.
"Ben, did I kill Josie?" "That could be, couldn't it? Maybe it was an accident, but they wanted me to kill Senator Jordan, and did I kill my Josie?"
Marco could not watch this any longer. Mercifully, he said,
"How about passing the time by playing a little solitaire?"
And he slid the force deck across the table. He watched Raymond relax. Raymond got the cards out of the box and began to shuffle mechanically and smoothly. Marco had to be sure that his Red Queen would command the authority to supersede all others. He had never been permitted to read Yunlo's complete instructions for the operation of a murderer. Therefore, the force deck, which had been enlisted at first as a time-saver to bring the Red Queen into immediate play, was now seen by Marco as his insurance policy, which had to be 7 ways more powerful than the single Queen of Diamonds that the enemy had used. Every time Raymond's play showed the Red Queen, which was from the first card set down, he attempted reflexively to stop the play. Marco ordered him to play on, to lay out the full, up-faced 7 stacks of solitaire. At last, there was a raid of pantheon of Red Queens in imperious row. Where was Josie? Raymond asked himself, far inside himself, as he stared at the advancing sweep of costumed monarchs. The 7 queens commanded silence. They began to order him through Marco to unlock all of the great jade doors which went back, 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 along an austere corridor in time to the old, old man with the withered, merry smile who said his name was Yun Lo, and who promised him solemnly that in other lives, through which he would journey beyond this life, he would be spared the unending agony which he had found in this life. Where was Josie? Mr. Gaines had been a good man, but he had been told to make him dead. Amen. He had had to kill in Paris. He had killed in London by special appointment to the Queen of Diamonds, offices in principal cities. Amen. Where was Josie? The tape recorder in the holster under Marco's arm revolved and listened. Raymond stared at the 7 queens and talked. He told what his mother had told him. He explained that he had shot Senator Jordan, and that he had that after he had shot Senator Jordan, he had... Marco's voice slammed out at him, telling him he was to forget about what had happened at Senator Jordan's until he, Marco, told him to remember. He asked Raymond what he had been told to do in New York. Raymond told him. In the end, when all Marco's questions had been answered, but not until the very end, did it become clear to Colonel Marco what they would have to do. Marco thought of his father and his grandfather and of their army. He considered his own life and its meaning. He decided for both of them what they would have to do. They walked away from the terrace, past the seal pond, through the bobbing flowers in the garden of toy balloons. They walked past the bars marked Yak Poephagus Grunions, Central Asia, and then moved out slowly through the gauntlet of resters and lovers and dreamers toward the backside of General Sherman's bronze horse. At 60th Street on 5th Avenue, Marco tried to anticipate the changing of a traffic light. He stepped down from the curb 2 steps in front of Raymond, then turned to hurry Raymond along so that they could beat the light when the drive-yourself car rented by Chun Jin hit him. It threw him 12 feet, and he lay where he fell. A crowd began to collect itself out of motes of sunlight. A foot policeman came running from the Hotel Marquis at 59th Street because a woman had screamed like a crane. Chun Jin leaned over and opened the door. "Get in, Mr. Shaw, quickly, please!" Raymond got into the car, carrying his satchel, and as the car zoomed off into the park, he slammed the door. Chun Jin left the park at 72nd Street, crossed to Broadway, and started downtown. They did not speak until they reached the dingy hotel on West 49th Street, when Chun Jin gave him the key stamped 301, wished him good luck, shook his hand while he stared into Raymond's tragic yellow eyes, told him to leave the car, and drove off going west. Raymond changed clothes in room 301. He entered the garden through a door marked Executive Entrance on the 49th Street side at 5:45 during the afternoon recess, while the building held only 5% of the activity it had seen 1 hour before. The candidates' acceptance speeches were scheduled to appear on all networks from 10 to 10:30 that night, and after that the campaign would start. Raymond was dressed as he had been told to dress, as a priest, with a reversed stiff collar, a black suit, a soft black hat, and heavy black shell eyeglasses. He smoked a large black cigar from the corner of his mouth, and he carried a satchel. He looked overworked, preoccupied, and sour. Everybody saw him. No one recognized him. He walked across the main lobby just inside the 8th Avenue gates and climbed the staircase, slowly, like a man on a dull errand. He kept climbing. When he could go no farther, he walked along behind the top tier of the gallery seats, now empty, not bothering to look down at the littered floor of the arena 6 stories below him. Carrying the satchel, he went up the iron stepladder that was bolted to the wall, climbing 22 feet until he reached the catwalk that ran out at right angles from the wall and led to the suspended box that was a spotlight booth, used only for theatrical spectaculars. He let himself into the booth with a key, closing and locking the door behind him. He sat down on a wooden packing case, opened the satchel, took out a gun barrel, then the stock of a sniper's rifle, and assembled the gun with expert care. When he was satisfied with its connection, he took the telescopic sight out of its chamois case, and after polishing it carefully, mounted it on the piece.